Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. According to the National Safety Council, snow shoveling is responsible for thousands of injuries every year. And you know what? Many could be prevented. So we'll talk about ways to prevent injuries with our guests today, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So what helps you prevent problems when you shovel? Do you have a question about treating back pain, maybe because of shoveling? I hope you'll join in the conversation. We can deal with a variety of physical therapy issues, of course, today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Lori Tine-Brody, welcome back.
It is good to be back.
And Jill Tine-Nissenbaum.
Hi.
Good to see you.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty well.
Because you haven't had to shovel. Right. Have you been shoveling? Or has Emily been doing the shoveling?
I have an electric start.
Snowblower.
Yeah, has there been enough snow to use your snowblower?
Yeah.
Do you have a one-stage or a two-stage?
It's a two-stage.
Ooh, yeah. That's what we have, too.
Nice. Well, so that's one solution.
Right. Yeah,
it's one solution.
Why does it cause so many problems, Laura?
Oh, well, you know, you take, for example, the tiny bit of snow that we had last night. It froze. Mm-hmm. So first it rained, and then it kind of sleeted, and then it snowed. So you go out and you look and you think, oh, that's just a little dusting of snow, but it's hiding the ice underneath. So that's, you know, problem A with the snow.
That's probably the worst one.
Yeah, it is, though. It's the most dangerous. That's what accounts for the falls, the fractures, the you name it. You know, and the other part of it is, usually on this show, we have an opportunity to talk about raking
before we talk about snow.
But, you know, there's a lot of places where there were leaves on sidewalks, mm-hmm. leaves on driveways, yet, and then it snowed on top of it. And you have this wet, soggy mass of leaves with snow on top of it. It was really heavy, and people were just not prepared for it.
Right.
And so, so shoveling. Yeah, so, you know, my favorite thing is the response I gave to you, and that is when you can hire a teenager. I mean, really, support the economy, get some younger people to divide up the work. So it doesn't mean you have one kid do it, but if you can get two or three people attacking the job, then that makes it that much smaller for everybody. Other than that, you do it in small pieces. Instead of going out and shoveling your entire driveway all at once, you have a cup of coffee, go mm-hmm. shovel some of the driveway, come and have another cup of coffee, go out and shovel some more. Do it in smaller bits. So don't try to attack the entire thing at once.
And the other thing is, a lot of people don't like to shovel until it's done snowing. Because mm-hmm. then, oh, I have to shovel again. And it's better to do a lighter load a few times than actually wait until you get 9 inches, like my friends in Michigan have right now, and go out and wait till there's 9 inches of snow.
I know. My neighbors often think I'm crazy because I'll be out in the snow and I'll be shoveling.
Me too.
They'll be saying, well, you know, why don't you wait until it's done? Well, because I'd rather shovel it twice at half the weight than shovel it once and just be exhausted or hurt my back.
I actually do that with a snowblower.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing you have to consider are the aprons of the driveway, at the end of the driveway, when the snowplow comes by and piles that up. And of course, when do you do the aprons? At the end, right? You do that when you're probably a little fatigued or a little tired. So prior to doing an apron is probably a really good time to come in and take a break, have your cup of coffee and rest. Don't do that after you've shoveled your entire driveway and you're fatigued and already tired and then have to lift that really heavy load after the snowplows come by.
Yeah. And then, you know, using good mechanics, when you can push the snow, get those big shovels where you can just walk behind it and push it rather than having to lift it. And I love my dad, who passed away 5 years ago, but he always said that first couple snowfalls, you have to push that snow farther back so that you don't have to lift the snow, your third or fourth snowfall, over the pile you've created on the edge of the driveway. And
He's right.
I hate that, but he again was right.
Right. He moved it back. He used to move it back about 3 or 4 feet.
Yep.
And that was a really good strategy.
Yeah.
I can remember taking a pickaxe across the street to one of my neighbors who the plow had come through and then they had been gone and then it froze.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She was out there trying to get these boulders.
Right, yeah. Right.
And I took a pickaxe over there and we got into it pretty quickly and got took care of it.
Yeah.
She was glad to see me coming.
Oh, yeah. I bet she was. It's a good thing she knows you, a guy coming at her all bundled up with a pickaxe.
Right.
Lucky she didn't call 911.
The other thing you can do is if it's a really light snow, one of those really dry snows, this is what I do.
Yeah.
I use my leaf blower.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen people do that.
I blow it as much as I can. So I'm not going to lift it. I'm going to blow it. The only thing is sometimes that makes it a little slick. So you got to be a little careful with
that. Yeah, I would think. No, somebody hasn't listened to your sage advice and has now hurt their back while shoveling. What's the best treatment if you do injure your back?
Well, the clinical practice guidelines set forth by the American Physical Therapy Association, depends, first of all, on what you've hurt. But in general, we know that bed rest is bad. So we want to do what we call optimal loading. So you need to modify your activity, but laying in bed for 3 or 4 days, which used to be recommended, is no longer recommended. Okay, so we consider that optimal loading. Typically in the acute stage, using ice is recommended. And then slow movements, easy gradual movements. If you can tolerate taking an over-the-counter medication that you've had success with previously, you could do that as well. But we've really gotten away from complete bed rest.
Right. And the key is modification and figuring out, if you think about it like a bell-shaped curve when Jill talked about optimal loading. So the optimal load is somewhere under that center of the bell-shaped curve. You don't want to underload it. And you don't want to overload it. And that sweet spot of just the right amount of loading is going to be a little bit different for everybody depending upon your posture, your overall health, your condition, your age, and so on and so forth.
Mo and O'Connell emailed to say that last year he hurt his elbows while he was throwing snow. Mm-hmm. Is there a good technique?
So more than likely, he probably developed a little bit of lateral epicondylitis or garden variety tennis elbow because of having to grip the shovel so hard. That would be my guess. And then having to do all that wrist extension, he probably gave himself a little bit of tennis elbow. I guess in Wisconsin, we can call it shoveler's elbow.
We could call it shoveler's elbow.
So the biggest thing would be to, again, frequent breaks, to not do that heavy, heavy, hard gripping and do that, you know, for a prolonged period of time. So taking frequent breaks would be good. The other thing, he may, if his gloves were slippery, that might have been a factor. So make sure he has good sticky gloves.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing would be thinking about the grip size on the shovel.
Right.
So, you know, just like a good tennis player where we want to make sure they have the optimal grip size for their tennis racket. If you have a grip that's really small, that could be an issue as well. And then if it's a chronic problem, you can get wrist splints. I know I've had elbow issues with I was carrying wood is what caused my elbow issues. And I just put on some wrist splints when I was doing heavy lifting. So if it's a chronic problem, slipping on those, you know, wrist splints, your thumb and fingers are exposed, you can go ahead and do that. And that should help.
And, you know, just the arms. I think that I was thinking about where do I ache usually? And it's usually if I get a little ache the next day or whatever, it's from the arms. And it's probably the same thing, huh?
Mm-hmm. You're just not used to it. You're lifting. You know, you ask yourself, when's the last time you repeatedly lifted something that was, you know, what, 5 to 15 pounds?
At the end of a long lever.
Yeah.
It's not like it's close to your body, especially if you have to chuck it pretty far. Mm-hmm. You know, so that becomes challenging when people have, like we did at our house, we had a house on one side of our driveway, so all the snow had to go in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, the other way, there's strategies to how you shovel your snow.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, as our father used to say, Ohio, only handle it once.
Right.
And only take it the shortest distance. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to take your snow from one end of the driveway all the way to the other side of the driveway unless you have no choice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today. We started by talking about snow shoveling and back issues relating to it. You may have some physical therapy questions as well, maybe about snow shoveling, maybe about something else. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So what about exercises during these winter months to kind of keep us sort of in shape for this sort of business?
Well, again, you know, we crashed into winter, you know, kind of like Brexit crashing out. We crashed into winter rather unexpectedly. So I don't know that people were really prepared for that. But I have seen people out running. So, you know, depending upon what the conditions are, you can still get out and run and do those things that you enjoy doing. You just have to make sure that you're dressed for it and that you have the right shoe wear. And again, we've talked about ice bugs before, but those are a great shoe that has good traction, and they make a variety of styles if you're out walking the dogs, if you are a runner, or if you're just walking there. They're a really good shoe with some traction built in. Otherwise, getting traction that you place on the bottom of your shoes, such as Yak Tracks or something like that.
Those ice bugs, are those are the ones you can't buy in the store? You have to order them
online? I think you have to order them online. Yeah, I don't know that anyone carries them. I think the last time we looked.
But people just rave about them.
They do. Right. The people who have them rave about them. So I don't have a pair. I think it might be on my list this year for the holidays.
I was thinking about that too. The only issue was they tend to run a little small, so you need to figure maybe a half size or better.
That could be. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at them that closely.
Somebody on the show said that.
Okay.
Once, so
all right.
It's something to.
Yeah.
But the real name is ice bugs.
The ice bugs. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I say to the patients I see when they're, you know, kind of just getting into an exercise program is it's really important right now to get into the routine of being in an exercise program and setting that as a priority. Because if you prioritize, you know, your work, your family, oh, there's this event or that thing going on, and exercise keeps getting moved to the bottom of your priority list, the short days, the darkness, all that
cold stuff
is, it's just going to win, and you are going to find yourself being very sedentary over the winter. So before things get really dark and deep, this is the time to establish good exercise habits, whether it's in your house, in a studio, in a facility, or outdoors.
And if you do exercise outdoors, it makes all the difference in the world to have the right gear. So the ice bugs, appropriate coat, hat, mittens, shoe wear, all of that makes all the difference in the world.
And it is a slippery slope, and it's a quick slope. I mean, it's happened to me where you get out, something happens, and you're a week or two goes by, and
right.
You haven't.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just, you've got, oh, all right, I got to get back doing this.
Right, exactly. One day becomes 1 month.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy to have that happen.
It does not take long. That's the same thing we see with an injury. You know, people could be in a regular routine, and maybe they have a slip and fall, and they hurt their knee or they hurt their elbow or whatever, and so they get out of the routine of their regular exercise while they're recovering, and then it's really hard to get back in.
Yep.
Well, we'll take some calls. You can join in right now at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We've got Stella and Sonia on board, and there's a spot for you as well. So shoot us an email, send us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And you're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today. We started with shoveling and back issues, but we'll take other things as well with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the UW-Madison. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer in the Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, we go to you now. Thank you very much for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. I would like to just amplify a little bit. You very briefly mentioned snow scoops, and we discovered them a number of years ago, and they're wonderful. It's a great big scoop that has an inverted U-shaped handle,
mm-hmm.
and you just shove it along. You never lift, you never throw.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You shove it along, and then you go off to the side, and you shove it, you kind of give a sharp thrust forward and jerk it back.
So let me ask you this, Stella. In your first snow, do you shove it farther back, or what happens your subsequent snowfalls?
Right. That's the other thing. What we do is, first, early snows, we go back into the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get a really heavy snow, what we do is go first and make a ramp off into the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a scoop full of snow and run it up the ramp and take it off into the yard.
Oh.
Great big piles of snow in our yard.
Oh, that's great.
It's not a matter of shoveling it. It's a matter of parking it.
Yeah.
Parking it. Right. Nice. I like that idea.
So it's a push and a park.
A push and a park.
Yeah, I like that.
No, that's
a great
very
idea.
That's very
excellent.
Good information.
And so do you have any particular shoes or boots that you like for walking up the snowy ramp?
I just always wear my shoes. Rick, do you wear boots?
Sometimes I use sandals.
Yeah. Sometimes he uses sandals.
Depends on the snow. Sometimes he uses sandals.
Okay.
Only in Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. I love that visual. Thank
right,
you for
right,
that.
Right.
Stella, thanks. Thanks. So you make a ramp.
Yeah. Make a ramp.
Make a ramp.
Yeah.
Excellent.
There we go.
Excellent.
And then you go out to and you pack it. You know, we have at one corner of our yard is where we end up dumping the snowplow sludge.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of snow from sidewalk that goes across the front of our house, as well as a very long driveway.
Yeah.
And we build that ramp and it tamp it down put it as far into the yard as we can from the beginning, because it gets to be so that eventually on the edge of it you'll go through.
Stella, you got to send me a photo.
Oh, yeah,
when
exactly.
That
I want to see, and I want to see Rick in his sandals with the snow shovel.
It's the art and science of scooping.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, shoot us. You probably don't have a photo of it now, but when sometime this winter,
yeah, we'd
when
love that. Yeah.
I would love to see that, and so would Lori and Jill. So great, great story. Thank you, Stella. Well, Sonia in Madison has something different to talk about. Let's go there. Hi, Sonia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been nursing a hamstring injury, but recently I've started to get a really sharp pain into my heel when I flex my foot or do like a forward bend, certain motions. Just kind of wondering if those are connected and if any kind of physical therapy would help with that. I'm still able to, like, we, you know, do lots of different things, but it does certainly, it's always there, and I'm very careful, you know, when I make certain moves, because I know it's going to, like, send that sharp shooting pain through my heel.
So how long has this been, and how did you injure it originally?
My hamstring?
Yeah.
I always have tight hamstrings, and so I guess it's this last little injury has been, I don't know, probably since August. Hmm. My problem is I probably don't nurse it long enough or whatever, so I keep running or, you
right.
know, do whatever
right.
I can. And the sharp pain has started about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's probably time to see a physical therapist. I definitely think the two are related. I'm not sure if the hamstring strain is truly a hamstring strain or if it's more nerve related. It sounds like the sharp shooting pain down into your heel, especially when you pull your toes up or when you forward bend, that all loads or stretches your nervous system a little bit. So I'd be concerned that you have some sort of nerve irritation. That would be one of the diagnoses on my potential list. And that would definitely be something a physical therapist could treat. And if you've had this chronic hamstring kind of condition, it's probably time to get it looked at and get everything taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. So they need to do a differential to say, you know, is this really a primary hamstring problem, or is your are your tight hamstrings secondary to an issue in your low back?
Right.
So a nerve, if you've got a nerve issue, how does physical therapy treat a nerve issue typically? Mm.
So it kind of depends on what mm-hmm. in and of itself the nerve issue is. If there's something compressing on the nerve root that we think is causing kind of the radicular type symptoms, many times changes in positioning can help offload the nerve root for a little bit, kind of letting things heal. So many people, if they do have a nerve root irritation, will initially feel better with their back in extension or kind of arched, and that will take load off of a nerve root versus forward bending or flexing will cause some pressure on a nerve root, whether it's disc material or inflammation soup is what I refer to it a lot. So PT can help with kind of offloading that nerve root until things can heal up a little bit. And that's one of the many things we can do. Sometimes there's impaired mobility in the nervous system. We can actually teach people how to kind of slide and glide their nerves through sheaths. All your nerves are in sheaths, and you can floss them like you floss your teeth. And that's sometimes a strategy as people have impaired mobility in their nervous system, and that needs to be addressed.
Hmm. So it's not exactly treating the nerve itself unless it's impaired mobility in the nerve sheath, as she talked about. But if you think about, for example, a more obvious example, as you go to Disney World, you walk around for 3 days and your knee swells. The same kind of issue can happen in your back with the little facet joints in your back. And so if you irritate, overload, overdo it with your back, such as shoveling, or something, and those little joints swell, they put pressure on the nerve root. So we do strategies such as positioning that Jill said, certain exercises and activities to help decrease the stress on that joint so the swelling goes down, takes the pressure off the nerve root.
Sonia, does that all help?
Yes, it does. So do you think I need to see my primary care provider first? Just go straight to the PT.
So that's a great question. And by law in the state of Wisconsin, you may see a physical therapist through direct access. You do not need to see a physician. However, certain insurance companies require you to have a physician's referral on board prior to getting reimbursed. So the easiest thing to do is if you have established care with a physical therapist is give them a call and they will be able to tell you if, yes, this is direct access, you can come in. We know your insurance. You don't need to see your primary care doc. Or they'll say you may need to call your primary care physician or that your primary care physician may need to see you. So by law, you don't have to see one, but for insurance purposes, you may.
All right. There you go, Sonia. Thanks so much for calling. Jim in Cleveland will give you a shot now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I wanted to call and thank your guests for advice and a suggestion they gave me last year that I suffer from neuropathy in my feet after a series of chemotherapy treatments. And I was frustrated in walking with my walker, and I needed that to keep my balance and things. But you suggested that I convert to using ski poles. So for Christmas, I got ski poles for a Christmas present, and I use those throughout the summer. And so I can use those now even in the cold weather. And it made me feel very secure in walking and helped my balance so that I was able to continue walking.
That's fantastic.
That's wonderful.
And you know, and you get to stand upright. You know, the walker, the walker doesn't work very well in the snow. Plus, it encourages you to bend over. So the walking poles keep you nice and upright. Good for you.
Oh.
And it works my arms.
Sure.
For upper body. So thank you. Thank you so much. It was a wonderful Christmas present and well used.
Well, that's cool. Well, thank you so much for calling. That's awesome.
We love to hear those stories.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much.
Keep walking and keep listening.
Mary in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had both knees received a total knee replacement in 2017 and had wonderful PT for rehab. I've got virtually no pain in the knees now. I do walking, biking, yard work sort of exercises. About a month ago, I noticed there's a clicking sound in my right ankle. I don't know if it's related to the knee replacement. it's not there if I'm very careful to roll my foot from heel to toe and sort of pause a second on the toe. Now, I don't know if I should be calling my orthopedic surgeon, if it's maybe somehow related to that. Should I call PT? Should I just be rolling my foot? So, should I get new shoes?
Well, first of all, you should always get new shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a no-brainer. So, Mary, is this click, is it deep in the joint or is it on the outside of your ankle? Can you tell us about that?
It sounds like it's on the outside. It doesn't hurt. It's just a little click.
Okay. Is it painful?
No.
Oh, it's probably a peroneal tendon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a tendon that runs around your outside bottom ankle bone. And every once in a while, it can kind of roll around and give you that click. I'm not sure why it's coming on all of a sudden now. I don't know if it's from increased activity or why one side versus the other. But if it's not painful, I would just keep a close eye on it and monitor it. And I don't think you need to see anybody. If it starts to get painful and uncomfortable, I would probably reach out to the physical therapist that you saw for your total knee replacements.
Yeah, and I'd just be aware of how I walk. And as Jill said, it could be a shoe issue. Maybe your shoes are getting worn out and they're not giving you enough support, so you're loading that side of your ankle a little bit more, especially at the end of the summer. If you've been active with yard work and stuff, you may have worn out whatever shoes you usually wear, or maybe change them for the winter now that it's winter. I would just be cautious of my shoes and see somebody if it starts to hurt. But other than that, if clicking, popping isn't painful, we generally don't get too worked up about it because everyone clicks and pops to some extent.
There we go, Mary. Thank you so much. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Carrie in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, Larry and ladies. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
So I seem to have inherited from my mom a real tightness in my upper part of my leg. And I just remember this as a child when she'd get up like off the couch. It would take her 3 steps to really walk right. And I would say, Mom, what's wrong? She goes, oh, no, it's nothing. You know, I'm tight. So now it's happening to me. And I mentioned this to the doctors. Nobody can tell me what it is. And it really just happens from a seating position. Like when I get out of bed, it doesn't happen. But when I'm driving a car, when I get out, like my first 3 steps, it's like real tight. Like I can hardly walk. And people are looking at me like, what's wrong with you?
So,
is it both hamstrings?
Just one.
Just one. Okay. Have you seen anybody? So you saw your doctor. Have you seen a physical therapist?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that much of a problem, but it's just kind of like I wonder.
Sure.
Like, okay, this happened to my mom. Now this is happening to me.
Sure.
And actually, I mentioned this to my brother, and he's like, we just feel like we're all so tight. Like he can't touch his fingers to his shoulders.
Yeah.
Like that's how tight his arms are.
So
it's just like,
yeah. So a couple things. One is that you inherit your connective tissue from your parents. So if your connective tissue is stiff, you know, there's a whole continuum. There's people who are super loose, which is probably more of an issue than being super tight, frankly.
Right.
And you may just be on the super tight end of the continuum. It would probably be reasonable, since you have some concerns and questions about this, to see a physical therapist for a couple of visits, have them assess your mobility in your joints around your body, and see if there's something specific you should be doing to maintain flexibility in those connective tissues as you age, because we know connective tissues get stiffer as we get older. So this would be the time to get in a good regimen, whether it's yoga or some other kind of flexibility, mobility activity to maintain mobility in all of your connective tissues. So that tightness, you know, some of it sounds almost like it's coming from your back after a sitting position.
Right, because it doesn't bother you when you're laying down.
Right, exactly. And you would expect that it frankly, should be worse in the morning after being immobile all night as compared to sitting for 30 or 60 minutes or something like that. So it almost makes us think that it's actually tightness in your low back or tightness in your hamstrings that's creating stiffness that comes from your low back. Thus, seeing somebody and having them sort these issues out, looking at your flexibility throughout your body and setting you up on a program so that as you age, these don't create problems for you.
Right.
Good luck. Yeah. Thank you, Carrie. Appreciate the call. Betty in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you, Betty?
Yes. I have a dropped foot, and I've had it for years. And it's, as I'm aging, it's getting worse. And I'm, you know, more and more afraid of falling and tripping. So is it better to visit a chiropractor or a PT?
So what is a dropped foot, by the way?
Yep. So a dropped foot is when it's typically a peripheral nerve injury where you injure the nerve that helps lift your foot up when you walk so you can swing your toes through.
Oh,
so people have a tendency to kind of drag their toes. So as Betty said, it puts you at risk for falling. You have to hike your hip higher, try saying that five times fast, or bend your knee more when you walk so you clear your toes. And so, Betty, what was the cause of your foot drop?
It's slow progression. I do not know what caused it.
Well, that would be job one, is figuring out what caused it, particularly if it's been progressive.
Right.
So you want to find out what's causing that, because there could be some intervention to slow or stop the progression of the drop foot. Drop foots don't just sort of drop in out of space. There is some underlying cause for that drop foot. And then thereafter, what we treat you with initially is it's called an AFO, an ankle-foot orthoses, and that's a small splint that holds your foot up so that you don't catch your foot and trip and fall, because you are absolutely right. You're at very high risk for a fall, and now that we're getting into the winter and things are slippery and you're having to spend, frankly, more time standing on a single leg in order to get that other foot to clear the ground, you are at risk for a fall. So
right.
I'd start with my physician and get assessed for why you might have a drop foot. The physician can also start the process of ordering the ankle foot orthosis for you and get you on board with an orthotist, or they sometimes have those off the shelf that they can get for you. But you should be getting an AFO sooner and seeing your physician to figure out why this is happening.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So what would be some of the causes, other than, is there an injury or is it just
So it could be a peripheral nerve injury. So it could be that your nerve that goes to these muscles somewhere down in your shin, for whatever reason, got compressed.
Or around your knee,
kind of got compressed and is no longer working. There are some progressive neurological diseases that start distally. It could be some sort of neuropathy. Mm-hmm.
Could be something coming from your back.
Could be
pressure on a nerve from your back. So there are a number of suspects there. And the key is you want to find out which one it is, because, again, there may be some intervention, whether it's treatment at your back or looking, you know, they'll probably do some studies of your nerve to see where the nerve is being pinched, compressed, whatever, so that they can see if there's some treatment for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to know why this is happening.
Yes.
Okay?
Thanks,
okay.
Betty.
Wonderful.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck with that, Betty.
Mike in Milwaukee, turning to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Madison, we're fortunate to have a Tom Ritlin has a company called Extra Strider online. And those are like ski sticks, except they aren't. They're good on pavement, and you can get different tips for different environmental conditions, and they're terrific. The hand, where you grip it with your hand, it's all molded beautifully. I can't say enough of these. These are terrific. They're much better than the ski sticks. they are actually made for walking and mm-hmm. all different things. So I recommend them.
That's awesome, Mike. Do you know if they're available in stores or are they only available online?
I only deal with them online. They're pronto. If you want something, they're very helpful, and they'll help you to get that stuff the next day or in 2 to 3 days, you know.
Yeah. Some people don't have internet access or have difficulty with that. So it's always nice to know if there's a plan B for those
folks.
What's
the name of the company again?
If you don't have internet access, you just call your public library and ask them for the phone number for
Exerstrider.
Yep. Exerstrider. It's Exerstrider.
Yep. I do see those.
I see patients with those wandering around. So that's great.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Well, thank you,
thanks
Mike.
For that call,
thank
Mike.
You for
we
sharing.
Appreciate it. Our listeners appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Exerstrider.
Exerstrider.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Tom in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Tom.
Well, thank you, Larry. And I want to thank the PT trainer for answering all these questions. The question I have is years back, 20, 25 years ago, I had a sciatic on my right side. That goes down to my foot. 70% of the times when it gets lazy, my sciatic on the right side. Well, last year, I kind of, making firewood, I blew out my left side, the sciatic. I went up, well, I pulled my groin on the left side when I did that on the left side. So they took an x-ray. I got a little bit of arthritis in my hips.
Mm-hmm.
And the question I have is, she prescribed, that was, about 9-10 months ago when I went up for the left side when I had the x-ray with the arthritic hips. And when I told her I pulled my groin in my left side and I had the sciatic on the right side, she said that with the arthritic in your hips, and she said, well, when most women pull bad hips, they get it going down to their groin, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, hips do refer to groin. That's correct.
So the question I have is, a week and a half ago, I've been taking, she prescribed 8 months ago, she gave me prednisone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was a steroid.
Yep, a steroid.
And it lasted for a little bit. So I'm not much for a pill guy with the, you know, with Advil and all
sure.
that. So, my wife suggested that she got a sample of the CBD oil.
Yep.
And she had 15 pills, and there were 5 milligrams a piece.
Okay.
So I tried those, and 2 days later, I really got loosened up.
Oh, wow. Perfect. Good for you.
It was amazing. I was more flexible, and I'm 69 years old. And I abused my body through the years. So, but for the pain, it took the pain down at least 60-70%.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's you were really fortunate. There are apparently a lot of different versions of CBD oil, and not all of them work the same way for the same kind of issues. So, if you're going to try CBD oil, you know, you may want to check with your physician to see if there's any contraindications to that. You can check with your pharmacist. But then I will go to a reputable place that really understands the different delivery mechanisms, you know, an oral versus a topical, et cetera, and the different types of CBD oil, because some apparently, I am told, and this is not my area of expertise, are formulated for different kinds of problems, arthritis versus acute pain versus chronic pain and so on.
So it's always worth, I guess, if you're trying something new and if you're on some other medications, you mm-hmm. want to
check with your doctor.
Absolutely.
Check to make sure that you're not following up one of the other medications.
Absolutely. Start with your doctor and or pharmacist.
Right. All right. There we go. Tom, thank you very much.
Thanks for that story.
Lori Tyne, Brody, Jill Tyne, Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. Our guest today, I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today on the show, Larry Mueller here with my guests, Lori Tyne, Brody, and Jill Tyne, Nissenbaum, both from the University of Wisconsin, Madison. Great to have them with us. And we will go back to the phones. I think Alan Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Al.
Yes, hi, thanks. When I take long drives and get out to walk to the store, my heel on my right foot's just hurts quite a bit. I went in for a checkup, mentioned it to my doctor, thought maybe it was plantar fasciitis, and but I told him doing that angle board thing,
the stretch,
doesn't
mm-hmm.
help it.
Right.
Doesn't
mm-hmm.
help at all.
Right.
And however, if I point my toes and turn that right foot to the left, I do get a pulling feeling that seems like it's stretching something, and it seems to work well doing that. Any thought maybe it was something else and that I should have it checked? So hearing you guys on the radio, I thought I'd ask you about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it only when you drive, when you're seated and have that right leg extended and kind of pushing on the gas pedal, Al, or do you notice it other times as well?
Well, I notice it if I'm walking in the mall or something like that, too. It will get irritated to an extent. But, boy, it's definitely on long drives and then getting out of the car.
Right.
So while I'm in the car, I don't notice it so much.
Yeah. So where in the heel does it hurt? Is it in the back, on the inside, outside, underneath?
Yeah, it's on the back, on the outside of the back.
Okay.
Yeah. So you could have a little bit of irritation of your sciatic nerve. That's the first thought mm-hmm. from sitting on that nerve and kind of compressing it while you're driving, especially with your leg kind of outreached to push on the gas and the brake. And so many more people have issues with their right leg than their left leg when they're driving for that reason. You have to think about how you're seated in your car and if you're seated on your wallet and if your seat is kind of even, or if you're leaning kind of, if a lot of people will lean to the right as they drive and put their elbow on that side rest. So those are things that you would want to consider or think about.
And people potentially like to stretch that leg out. So they have their seat back mm-hmm. and they think, oh, it's going to feel better if I just stretch my leg out. But that position also stretches your sciatic nerve. So sometimes people do better moving their seat a little bit closer. So in terms of follow-up, I would see a physical therapist and have them evaluate this and see if indeed it is coming from your back and if it's sciatica or if there's some tightness in the, like, your iliotibial band and down the outside of your leg. You know, pulling that foot in and moving that around, you could be getting what Jill referred to a little earlier, some nerve flossing. Mm-hmm. That's a classic way that we floss our sciatic nerve. So that kind of movement may be relieving some sciatic pain. And then the pain when walking in the mall, again, could be back-related because the mall floors tend to be linoleum over cement. And so every time your foot hits the ground, it sets a big sort of wave of every pound you put into the floor, which is, depending upon your speed of walking, anywhere from, you know, 0.75 to 1.5 times your body weight. And so it can be aggravating that sciatic nerve, especially as you extend your right foot forward and pull your ankle up. It stretches your sciatic nerve. So I would see a physical therapist and have them take a look at this and see if they can pinpoint precisely where that pain is coming from and then give you some strategies to deal with it.
I hadn't heard about moving the seat closer. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, I mean, a lot of people do want to stretch the muscles, but when you do that, you also kind of load your nervous system and you can lengthen it to the point that it becomes uncomfortable or irritated. It can actually become a little anoxic. And so you have to play with that a little bit. Seat height, make sure you're not leaning more on your right gluteal or buttock area when you drive. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do that. So for men, we always tell them to remove their wallet out of their back pocket because you're not sitting evenly when you sit on that.
And
so there's things to consider.
The other advice that Jill has often given is you get in the car and you set your posture. You think about it. Am I sitting equally on both hips? Well, you know, what's my leg position? Are my knees flexed? Am I having to reach? And then you adjust your rear view mirror to that position. And so then if you look and you're not quite seeing well in the rear view mirror, you know you've lost your good posture.
There we go. Al, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Anita in Duluth, Minnesota, it is your turn. Hi, Anita.
Hello. I injured my lower back, actually above my, below my ribs, in that soft tissue area between your ribs and hips.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a back strain, and that was last March. I have been exercising. I do yoga, Pilates. I hike. I'm in pretty good shape, and I still have the main pain is gone, but it's this. I still have this achiness and almost like a bruise. And I would like to figure out something I could do with a home remedy because it isn't so bad that it's stopping me from doing anything. But it's just I just feel like something's being strained there, and I should try to help it. And I wondered if you had any ideas.
So let me ask this. Are there any particular activities, positions, or postures that really annoy this?
Well, when I started Pilates, which was like a couple weeks ago, I noticed that it was I needed to be a little more careful with it. But since I started to get used to it, that changed. So that got better. I'm retired, so I do change up the way I walk a lot. I don't sit. I'm not sedentary. So, no, not really. I do mostly what I want to do.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds like you're trying to be active, which is wonderful. Well, there is a muscle over there, and it's called your quadratus lumborum. That runs over there, and it kind of attaches basically from your lower ribs to your hip bone, kind of where you mentioned. And it can be strained just like any muscle can be strained. And it's difficult to stretch it. Many times people feel like if they could stretch it, that would help. So this is on your right side. So one of the things you can do is if you can get in child's pose, and you know what that is from yoga. And then what you're going to do is you're going to take both of your hands over to the left. And that would really open up and kind of stretch that right side and kind of lean into it. So your back kind of makes a U-shaped curve with the fat part of the U towards the right. So many times we'll have people do this on their bed and then reach over to the side of their bed and kind of lean back into it to kind of stretch out that side. Obviously, I usually tell people to do both sides. And if you can feel like, oh, there's a big side-to-side difference here, that'll help you understand kind of the limitations or how tight that muscle is.
And what we often see with this quadratus lumborum problem is that people aren't aware that they're holding that tight. Mm-hmm. It's one of those muscles that you use to protect your back, and it's deep, and as Jill said, it's hard to find. So when you do that child's pose, you really have to focus on relaxing that and shoving that right hip out to the side and really letting it go to see if you can't get that deep, deep stretch.
The other thing that I recommend people do is when they get in child's pose to really kind of curve their back into flexion, if you can take a foam roller or a Pringles can or a tennis ball can or something and put it kind of right where you would bend over into child's pose and kind of curve over it, it'll put you in a little bit more flexion in your lumbar spine. And then when you do that kind of side bending stretch, it should help open it up.
A stiff pool noodle would work perfectly.
A stiff pool noodle would work too, although I do like the Pringles.
And a lot of people are wondering, what the heck is the child's pose?
So a child's pose is a yoga pose, and it is where you sit your buttocks back on your heels if you can. Your knees are fully flexed. And then you fold forward over it with your arms stretched out overhead.
So what I usually do is I start people in all fours on your hands and knees, and you then keep your hands where they are and sit your butt back on your heels.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we're telling her.
I can see it.
So that's what we're telling her to do, but to move her hands way over to the left to stretch her right side. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. There you go, Anita. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Terry and Roberts wonders, how many milligrams of ibuprofen are safe to take daily for mild arthritic inflammation?
So prescription ibuprofen is 1,600 milligrams a day. We know that. And the recommendation is taking it 4 times a day. Now, having said that, I'm not a pharmacist.
Right.
And I would never recommend that dosage without consulting your physician, speaking with them, and making sure that there would be no negative side effects with your current medication. And also, the biggest thing with that is stomach irritation.
Yeah. Well, so, and if he has mild arthritic inflammation, I would never recommend the maximum dose. So this is something he needs to vet with his physician and or pharmacist.
And many times it's what happens when people want to take it for like a low-grade inflammatory process is – in my experience, you have to take it consistently. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the biggest issue is people will take a couple Advil, one or two Advil in the morning, then they won't take it the rest of the day. And you need a low dose in your system to really see the benefits of the to decrease the inflammation. But definitely consult with a physician or pharmacist first.
I would not
want
to burn out my kidneys with that level of ibuprofen for mild arthritis.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would try movement first.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Terry, thanks for that email. And you know what? Our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, are going to be with us up until 12:30 today to answer your questions. You'll be able to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guest. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mehler. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here with my guest, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at the UW-Madison. Great to have them with us. Lots of callers online as we talk about all kinds of physical therapy issues. And so we'll go right back to the phones and to Rod in Cambria. Hi, Rod. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My wife has had non-diabetic neuropathy for 12 to 15 years. And about 3 years ago, she noticed something with a foot where it was crunching. We went to the doctor, and they discovered that she had 10 broken bones in her foot.
Oh.
Because she has sensory neuropathy. She couldn't, you know, really feel the pain.
Yikes.
And they said that it was had to do with the brain not being able to tell that the foot was warm or cold, pumped extra blood down there, and it deteriorates the bones and the tissue. So they put her in a brace that went up to her knee for 18 months to stabilize the foot, and it worked very well. Well, about 2 years ago, she noticed it starting in the other foot, and now she's wearing both braces.
Oh, no.
And she's having major back problems in the morning when she gets up. She has it's very difficult for her to bend over and things like that. Some doctors say, chiropractor, some say therapy, some say it's just because of the fact that it's changed her gait because of having to wear both braces. Any ideas?
Those are all great points, and thank you for sharing that complicated history. So is her back pain, they don't think her back pain has anything to do with her neuropathy?
Well, they don't think it's the neuropathy so much as it's the braces changing her footing because the braces she wears does not have hinges in the ankle.
Right. So she can't bend at the ankle joints, so then it changes how she uses things. So,
Yeah,
Rod, you're probably right that is probably the reason for the change in mechanics.
Right, exactly. And you know, people often look for a single cause for problems. And in most cases, there are multiple factors that come into play. And it's often just a perfect storm of, you know, 3 to 5 factors that have all come together and resulted in this problem. You know, for her, I'd really strongly urge her to find a pool to get into. A pool is a place where she can exercise. If she has limited weight bearing, she can be in the deeper water and she can walk and exercise and work on her balance with very limited weight bearing. It will be good to unweight her back. There's research that shows that 15 minutes of immersion to your neck will increase your spinal height. So it clearly unloads your back. So, you know, I would suggest getting her in a pool on a regular basis for exercise, both for her back, maintaining her balance, maintaining the strength in her legs and in her core.
By regular, what do you mean?
American College of Sports Medicine says 5 days a week. Now, I know that's a tall order, but that's the standard. So if you can get in 3 days a week, we're happy about that.
And and could potentially complement that pool program with a couple land-based exercises that she could do non-weight bearing. Mm-hmm. So because that we would take her ankle mechanics and the braces out of it to strengthen her back.
Exactly.
You could work some strategies out for that.
Right. Yeah.
Does that help, Rod?
Yes, actually, she does do warm water therapy a couple of days a week right now at the UW aquatic area at the Eastside Hospital.
Okay.
Oh, she's out at the American Center.
Madison.
Yeah. Great.
Right. She has been doing that, but she's only been able to get there a couple of days a week on average.
Right.
And even I go, I don't need it. I'm doing great, but I even go with her just to, you know, work for myself and be there to support her anyway. But it's we're really hoping we can come up with something where she can eliminate the morning time is the worst time for her. She does better as the day goes on, but she's always got pain.
That's a fairly classic scenario. How does she do on the day after she's been at the pool? Is there any difference with that?
Not really.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the fact that she needs to go more frequently, and she does steps and different things, and of course with the neuropathy, she can't do like the toe raises and things like that because of the damage to the left foot and the right foot now.
Right.
So okay.
What about like a recumbent bike? Can she do that?
We have one of those, and she can do that.
Okay.
But of course, with the pain now, it makes it more difficult to do that for any extended period of time or be able to build up a heavier load because then it hurts the hips. And we were thinking sciatic is what we thought initially, but it's seeming to be more than that.
Yeah. So, again, one of the benefits of the pool is you can increase the intensity, and it tends not to increase your pain the same way land-based exercise does. So adding resistance in the pool, moving faster in the pool, and getting there more frequently would be the best strategies, I think, given the limitations you've outlined for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Good luck.
All the things that you had mentioned, I think, are very good strategies for her.
And you sound like a very good husband.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rod. Appreciate it very much. Beverly in Cedarburg, it's your turn. Hi, Beverly.
Hi. Thank you very much. I have an issue. I'm 82, very active. On the treadmill, on the recumbent bike, and all that type of thing. But I also have lumbar spondylosis, and I have started having a lot of neuropathy. It's all on the right side, in my right toe and actually going to the second toe, and I can feel it in the metatarsal arch. And it's becoming concerning because I sometimes have issues when I walk, maybe tripping on the step or this kind of thing. And I'm wondering what your recommendation might be for that.
So what kind of treatment have you gotten for this, for your back? I mean, the assumption based upon how you frame this is that it's coming from your back and the spondylolysis in your back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because I've been diagnosed with osteoarthritis, and I had x-rays and this type of thing, and I have had physical therapy in the past and chiropractor.
So when were you last in therapy?
I was last in therapy about a year ago.
Well, if things are changing now, then it's time to go back for a tune-up. So one of the assumptions we tend to make is how things were a year ago is, you know, how things are now. And as things change, whether it's due to aging or changes in your back itself, your program needs to be revised to reflect your current physical state. So I would go back and get reassessed and see if there's some change that needs to happen to your exercise program. There may be a couple simple things that you're doing that are somehow aggravating this at this point in time. So that's where I would start.
There you go. Thank you so much, Beverly. Appreciate it, the call. Tom in Kenosha, it's your turn.
Hi, calling about knee pain.
Okay.
I'm 36, and I injured my knee playing soccer about 4 years ago. I was running, and I stopped hard on my left foot. No twisting. That was 4 years ago. Fast forward, I had it x-rayed in June, and the x-ray came back perfect. No arthritis. You know, gaps looked good. And I had an MRI done in September, and they really couldn't see anything, but I have a lot of pain by my patella.
Where by your patella? Below it or above it or behind it?
It does feel like it's on the lower portion, slightly behind the patella, lower portion.
So fat pad?
It could be fat pad, or it could be, is it right at the very tip of the under part of your patella?
Yeah, yes, I would
okay.
say yes.
Insertional tendinopathy.
Insertional tendinitis, yeah, tendinopathy.
So Lori and I are just looking at each other to differential diagnose you based on what's located there. And it could be a couple different things. It could that sudden rapid deceleration that you experienced could have been enough to significantly irritate the insertion of your patellar tendon right at the inferior aspect of your patella. When people get patellar tendinopathy, that's typically the location where they get it. So that could definitely be one factor. The other factor could be that you could have irritated your fat pad. If you hyperextend your knee, does that bother you? Is that painful at all?
Not when it's not. It doesn't. I don't have pain when it's not loaded.
Okay. So what things make it pain? Okay. So what things make it hurt?
Well, I can't run.
Okay. It's eccentric. Yeah. Yep. That's patellar tendon.
Yeah.
Yep. That sounds like a kind of a chronic patellar tendinopathy. So, and you're of that age. So,
yeah.
Sorry. So seeing a physical therapist would be perfect for you. Chronic patellar tendinopathy typically responds very well to heavy eccentric training. And there's some very good guidelines on how to optimally load your patellar tendon to kind of get it stronger, remodel the scar tissue. Because once you kind of have this process that goes on, you lay down scar tissue and it kind of lays down in a blob. We need to remodel it along the line of pull of the patella.
Yeah, and it's been 4 years, so this isn't going to go away in a hurry.
Right.
So you're going to need some guidance and someone to kind of hold your hand to get through this process.
Would they use some bands or something? What would they do?
So it's, yes. I mean, typically we do heavy eccentrics, which is more the lowering phase, for example, of a squat. You would do that. Some people do it on a 15-degree incline. It changes the load a little bit, so you can put somebody on an incline, and then you have them hold heavy weights as they lower themselves down as if they're sitting in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
You would bias just his injured side. So you do his injured side.
More than, but generally free weights more so than bands for this.
Right. You need way more than, you need a lot of load is typically the issue.
Yeah.
So holding plates or something.
Right.
So Tom,
not
that's probably
plates.
What you got to look forward to, Tom. One of those things.
Yes.
Thank you so much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Ellen in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. Yes, I twisted an ankle on Friday night, and it was quite non-weight-bearing and swollen. I literally could not walk on it. It was at night, so then I basically went to bed and put the ice on it and elevated it for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And I could walk on it the next day, so that was better. But it is extremely still swollen over the metatarsals, the toes, the Achilles tendon. I'm just wondering what I should do as far as rehab or let it go or
Yep. So I would definitely see a physical therapist for this. By the fact that you could walk on it the next morning, that kind of helps us rule out a fracture because there are some very specific, we call them Ottawa ankle rules, that would suggest that you need imaging done. But I think the fact that you're ambulatory the next day, you're probably okay. But what happens is all that swelling runs distally. It runs down to your toes, as you had mentioned, and pools there. We also know that inadequate rehabilitation for someone after an ankle sprain increases your likelihood of spraining your ankle again. And so we really would like to get people into rehab and get their ankle stronger so they do not have a second episode or end up with chronic ankle instability.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah, I'd see them sooner to to start dealing with the swelling. They can give you some strategies. You know, right now you should be elevating, compression, ice, the standard rest ice compression elevation kind of deal. Yeah, even though you're a couple days out, but still doing that. And then get in to see a PT. At this point, you could start some ankle isometrics.
Range of motion.
And some gentle range of motion. You know, ideally, we'd put your ankle in a bucket of ice slush and have you do the ABCs with it. So, you know, that kind of be where you'd start. So I'd get in and see somebody who can start you on sort of phase one activities and then follow up to get you back to activity. It sounds like you're pretty active.
Yes, I am. And so that's interesting because I wondered how long. I always heard the old adage of ice the first 24 hours and then heat afterwards.
Right. And that is somewhat of an old adage. So we really want to ice as long as the inflammatory process is going on. So if you still have swelling, warmth, all of that, the inflammatory process is still going on. So you and swelling, you should still be icing. And I know I have many people say that after 24, 48 hours, you should switch. And you should really pay attention to what your body is presenting with. For minor injuries, 24 hours of icing followed by switching to heat might be okay. But this was a big injury. So you still have a lot of inflammation going on. You should still be icing and elevating.
There you go, Ellen. Thank you so much. Justin in Black Creek, your turn. Hi, Justin.
Hi there. I wanted to make a comment for one of the previous callers. His wife had neuropathy. Now, one thing that helped me with my neuropathy tremendously was B vitamins, the B complex.
B as in boy?
A lot of people are very deficient in vitamins, all of them.
And yeah.
You need to take a look and start to research a little bit into your recommended daily allowances and try to at least get the minimum.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's good advice for everyone's health. Mm-hmm. And you know, in general, it's best to get those vitamins through your food because we're not clear what other kind of micronutrients coexist with those vitamins that might be important in their absorption, retention, function, and so on. So, but yes, absolutely making sure that you're getting all the essential vitamins, amino acids, et cetera, is important for your health. So,
yep.
Thanks,
yeah.
Justin.
Yeah, thanks for that reminder, Justin.
Jim in Green Bay, hello.
Yes, good morning. I'm a big fan of your show. You guys have, over time, given a lot of help to a lot of people.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome. My issue is I've been having problems, pain in my left hip area, and I'm trying to find out whether it's the hip joint itself or nerve in origin.
Mm-hmm.
And just a quick history is I've had problems with sitting for the last 4 years, painful sitting on my buttocks, and I imaging shows the L4 and L5 bulging and stenosis in the same area, and then severe arthritis in the right facets in the lumbar area.
Okay.
So that was all very stable for a long time. I started taking Cymbalta this summer, and that helped. But then about in the middle of the summer, I started getting this significant pain on my lower hip area on the back towards the bottom of the buttock. And I see, I think, one of your former students in Green Bay. I've seen him for a PT, Tom Cron.
Yes, tell him hi.
Yeah.
Tom's a great guy. He's worked with me a long time.
Yeah. Awesome.
Anyway, at first we thought it was in the piriformis.
Yep.
External rotator muscles. Yep. And then we weren't getting anywhere because it doesn't behave like a muscle tear. Or it's extremely sore when I get up at night to go to the bathroom or get up in the morning, and then during the day it loosens up and I'm fine. Yep. And then when I go to bed and I'm laying around, it gets really tight again. And it's sore when I cough. It's like a concussion on my spine.
You've just clarified that all very nicely, Jim. So yes, this is more than likely coming from your spine. Back. Sort of the sine qua non is I have pain when I cough. Mm-hmm. So primary hip pain usually refers to the groin.
Yep.
It's usually more groin related pain. If it's in the back in your buttocks, it's, you know, dollars to donuts. It's coming from L4, L5, and you have some stenosis there. If you're sitting, it's not unusual to be sitting in some lumbar flexion. And so that could be aggravating things in your back. Yeah, and so there are, if the question is this coming from my hip or my back, oftentimes it's really hard to distinguish which one is the primary. But in your case,
yes,
I'd say it's coming from your back. So
two people here.
Yeah, so if you haven't tried a pool, that'd be a great place for you to be.
I did have an injection last week because they took x-rays and they showed showed arthritis on the hip joint and bone spurs, and the doctor said, I had the injection last Wednesday, and he said if the pain goes away, then it's the hip. If it doesn't go away, it's something else.
Right.
Well,
I got
a little bit of relief.
Right.
But,
I think it's coming from your back, and I would definitely suggest trying the pool.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate it. Bob in Minocqua wonders about these TV ads about high-intensity laser treatment for back and neck pain. He sees them over and over again on TV at newscast time.
There's no evidence at this point for lasers being effective for neck and back pain. So, you know, we're not saying it doesn't work, but at this point, there's no evidence to support its use. I would start with physical therapy and activity first.
And we had John from Ashland. He has a meniscus tear. If he leaves his right leg bent at certain angles, he'll get excruciating pain in his knee. I know all about that.
Yeah, I bet.
He straightens his leg out. He often hears a pop, and the pain goes away almost instantly. What can he do? He can't always get it to pop, and he wonders how can he make it pop?
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So I would see my physician and figure out what's going on. So yes, it certainly could be a meniscus tear. Typically, you don't want that thing to pop all the time.
Right.
If he has, for example, a bucket handle tear that's flipping in and out of the joint, what it's going to do is wear down his joint surfaces and progress arthritis very rapidly. He could also be getting some popping in his kneecap. He could have some kneecap instability.
Could be from swelling.
It could, it could be a Baker cyst behind his knee. So there's a number of suspects in this case.
One of which is the meniscus.
Yeah, one of which is the meniscus, and it's probably highest on my differential diagnosis list, but he needs to see his physician and figure out what's going on, and only then can you come up with the right treatment program. We don't really know at this point.
And on that note, we are finished for the out of time. Thank you both so much. You're back on December 16th.
Wow. Fantastic.
December. We'll do it all over again.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Well, we have more snow.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
I'm buying a scoop.
Me too.
Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. They will be back December 16th. Would you like to hear more about our guests or show topics? Check out our new blog. Just go to WPR.org/Larry to see what's there. And if you missed part of our show, go to WPR.org/Larry and you can hear recordings of the broadcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.